Welcome to the Chris Saylor Show. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Princeton women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor. And we wouldn't be the Chris Saylor Show if we weren't joined by Chris Saylor, supposedly. That sounded like a little redundant there, but do I always say that? I'm joined by Chris Saylor on the Chris Saylor Show? For some reason.
No, you usually just say I'm joined by Chris Saylor.
It sounded weird when I said it. Well, Chris, welcome to your show.
Well, thanks, Jerry, once again.
So we're up to the most fun part of the year. Last week of the regular season, to be followed by the Ivy League tournament, to be followed by the NCAA tournament. This is what you play for. All your goals are right in front of you. I assume you're pretty excited about where you are.
Yeah, you're basically taking my whole talk there, Jerry. We're really excited about where we are. I mean, when you go into a season, you always want or hope to be able that you'll control your own destiny down the stretch of the season. And that's the position that we're in right now. We worked really hard to put ourselves in a position where we can win a sixth straight title on Saturday up at Cornell. But it's not going to be an easy task, so we know we have our work cut out for us.
So we'll get to that in a minute, but let's just talk about the big picture of where things stand before we talk about the specifics of the Cornell game. The four teams in the Ivy League tournament are set: Princeton, Dartmouth, Cornell, Penn, in some order to be determined. So some of the drama is eliminated. The tournament next weekend at Columbia. If your team wins on Saturday, you will have at least a share of the Ivy League championship. You'll also be the number one seed. Dartmouth, if they win and Princeton loses, Dartmouth is the outright champion. If Dartmouth beats Yale and Princeton beats Cornell, we have a co-championship. Cornell's still in the mix. Penn's still in the mix. Can possibly have a four-way tie for the championship. Cornell beats Princeton, Dartmouth and Penn win. Everybody's 5-2. So, you know, that's basically where it stands right now. When you lost to Brown, were you thinking big picture, win out, you'll be fine? Or were you thinking, you know, we have no margin for error? What are you thinking at that point?
Well, you're definitely thinking we have no margin for error. And if we win out, we'll be okay. You never want to lose early in the year. And look, Brown's a great team. They played well against us that day, and we weren't ourselves. I mean, after the first 15 minutes of that game. And, you know, you hate to be in that situation to have that loss early, and we knew our backs were against the wall, and we'd have to beat, you know, the Dartmouths and the Pens coming up if we wanted to have a chance at the title. And, you know, the final game will be this Saturday at Cornell, so we'll see how that goes.
So, I mean, I've thought about this. Obviously, if you won the Brown game and won all the subsequent games, that you would have already clinched at least a share of the championship. But on the other hand, if you won the Brown game, everything is different from that point. So you don't know that you're going to win those other games. And to win at Dartmouth, to win at Penn, and now to go to Cornell, to win this championship, you're going to have to beat the other three teams on their field, which is not easy to do.
Yeah, that's very true. It's going to be Cornell's senior day, so there's always extra motivation on senior day, I think, for a team. And winning on the road is not easy. But I'm really proud of this team and how we responded after that Brown loss. And we had Maryland was our very next game. And, you know, that's a tough combination. But I think so far we've been perfect in the month of April and have had some really big wins for the program.
If you look at, you know, I mean, we're a week away from the Ivy tournament. We're 2 weeks away from the NCAA tournament. But if you look at the NCAA committee released yesterday, I'm assuming you saw this, what the seeds would be if this tournament started today. Princeton, the 7, which means home games or home game. It means a bye in the first round and the second round home game. Are you thinking that far in advance? I mean, your NCAA tournament spot is pretty much sealed because of all the quality wins that you have, regardless of what happens this weekend in the Ivy tournament. But are you thinking, oh, you know, we can be playing at home?
Well, I did say to the team before the Harvard game, I mean, the seniors, it was their last game on 52, and my message to them after and actually before that game was that, you know, I hope that we win out the rest of our season in the Ivy tournament and we have a chance to play at 52 again. I thought it was a realistic possibility for us if we could win out the rest of the season that we would be a top eight and host. I didn't know, and I still don't know ultimately how that Brown loss will play into things, because there's not a team in the top eight or 10 right now that has a loss outside of probably the top 25 or 30. So, you know, that hurts. But as you said, we have a ton of quality wins to teams, you know, in the high teens. And
Penn, Dartmouth, Stony Brook, Florida,
Loyola, among others. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's a pretty good resume. Losses to Maryland and Virginia, who are high-ranked teams. It's just the unranked lost to Brown. So we're hopeful that, you know, we can finish the season strong and we'll end up where we end up, and whether it's home or away, you know, we'll be excited to be in the tournament and give it our all.
Do you ever consider the idea that you'd be better off being the 11 seed than the 7 seed, other than not playing at home part?
Did you think why? I don't really think about that much. I mean, I know there have years when we've been being the 8th seed can be tough. And 7th and 8th, you had that first
seven,
round.
7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, you had the first round. They had the first round game.
And but what happens if you're 7, 8, 9, 10, whoever those four teams are, and they're all going to be good teams, could even be Princeton, you win and your prize in the quarterfinals is going to either be Maryland or Boston College, where if you're 11, your prize is, you know, a great team, but, you know, it looks like those teams are a little bit above. So, I mean, if you're...
Yeah, and when that happens, I mean, the way I see it is, if you want to win a championship, you're ultimately going to have to play those teams and beat those teams, whether it's in a second round or a quarterfinal game, you know, you will meet them eventually. And sure, you'd rather meet them later rather than earlier, but the bottom line is, if you're going to advance and you're going to win, you have to play them. But I try not to be too caught up in that. I mean, the only thing you
that
can control is I'm sure it is, but it would drive you crazy, especially at this point where there are so many teams and it doesn't always line up in terms of seeds, because the regional piece is a huge piece of it in terms of pairings for NCAAs and women's lacrosse.
I know you're busy, but have you noticed what's going on the men's side with the tiebreakers?
I know that we have to win, I think, by
three or more
goals to make the tournament. So,
but have you seen what Cornell's situation is?
No, what's their situation?
So the Cornell men. So if the Cornell men beat Princeton or lose by one goal or two goals, they're in the Ivy League tournament. If they lose by 3, 4, or 5, they're out. If they lose by 6 or more, they're back in. Because of like a glitch in the tie breaking.
That's so crazy.
Right.
So I didn't really realize that. I only knew the three goals for us. So
the three goals for Princeton, it's it. You win by 3 or more, you're in. If you don't, you're not. But for Cornell, lose by 1, 2, or 6 or more. But 3, 4, or 5 and you're out. Or win the game outright, you're fine. But you know,
gosh, that's crazy. Well, I think we'll probably get to Cornell a little bit early because it's the doubleheader.
Yes.
So we'll get to see a little bit of that game before our game. I think the girls will look forward to that.
So how did this game end up being a doubleheader? Because it's never been a doubleheader with Cornell before that I remember.
Well, it's just the women's schedule has changed. It's now a rotating schedule. So every 2 years, the teams bump forward or back, however you want to think about it. So Cornell didn't, a couple years ago, they weren't our last Ivy game. It was Columbia. Now Columbia is our first Ivy game and Cornell is our last. And then after that 2 year cycle, Yale will be our last Ivy game. So it changes that way, and that's why we have the doubleheader this year.
So the men's game is at noon. The women's game is at 3 on Schoellkopf Field. Let's go back. Last week we didn't talk about the Yale game. It was a dominant performance start to finish, 19-4 final score. 12-2 at halftime? 12-4 at halftime. 14-2 at halftime,
I'm
sorry.
Yeah.
And I believe the same woman for Yale scored all four goals.
She did, yeah.
Were you worried going into the game about the emotional high that you were on after the Penn game a couple of days before and you had the quick turnaround? It seemed like none of that mattered.
Not so much. I really wasn't worried about that. I had a lot of confidence in our team, and we've been very focused, and we know what we want, and I thought we were going to go up and play really well at Yale.
At what point of that game were you thinking, this is not going to, this is going to be a good day for us? I mean, just before, like during warm-ups, or do you have to wait till the game starts?
You always have to wait till the game starts, but we got off to a great start.
Yeah.
We were moving the ball tremendously well on offense, and we were sharing the ball well, hitting open cutters and dodging well, finishing, our shooting percentage, I think, was around 62-63%. So we were doing really well with our shot selection, and we were winning draw controls. And really, we didn't have a lot of defensive play in the first half. But when we did, we were pretty much locked down, and we were winning ground balls in our DN, which is always a great sign.
So you mentioned the shooting percentage. Your team is 4th in the country in team shooting percentage. You're one of 4 teams in the country shooting better than 50%, 501 for the year, which is extraordinary. The Cornell team that you're playing on Saturday takes a lot of shots. Princeton doesn't take as many shots, but Princeton has a higher shooting percentage. So there are two different challenges that you have there. But let's start with the with the shooting percentage, what accounts for a team being able to make more than half of their shots?
Well, obviously you have good shooters, and you're getting the ball. You're in a great position to score. So you've got to be able to handle feeds. You've got to have kids who can see the net and finish. You've got to be able to, you know, get good angles on your dodges and lanes on your dodges to give yourself a quality shooting, a shooting opportunity.
Do you think that, I mean, because your team is also up among the national leaders in assists per game, which a lot of times assists leads to easy layups, but you also get a lot of shots where, you know, somebody's just running by somebody. But, you know, your team always sort of plays that way. And I would think that a team that sees as much zone as you see wouldn't have as high a shooting percentage. So it's obvious that you've solved the issue of zones, I guess.
Well, I don't know if you say we solved it, but I think we feel pretty confident in our ability to find the openings. And every zone you play is a little bit different. So you really do have to get the feel for it and figure out, is it going to be more outside shots, more second cutters, more inside looks, more dodges? And I think over time we've become better able to figure that out and to execute against the zones that we face.
So Cornell is playing for a championship, presumably. I mean, they need help from Dartmouth. They know that if they beat Princeton, they tie Princeton, and that, you know, they're already tied with Penn. But they also know that Dartmouth needs to lose to Yale, and obviously Dartmouth will be favored in that game. But Cornell's still playing for a championship. I actually didn't look to see what time Dartmouth-Yale is. I'm assuming that game might be over by the time Princeton,
I think it is,
Cornell starts. But forgetting that piece of it, let me ask you this question. If you're in a situation like that, suppose you're Cornell and you need to know, or suppose it was the opposite. So Princeton needs to beat Cornell and have Dartmouth lose to Yale. Would you want to know the outcome of the Dartmouth-Yale game before you played your game, if it was over? Or would you not want your players to know that? Or does that even matter?
I think it would depend on the result. I think I would probably want to know. But like I said, you can only control what you do. You can't be too invested in what's happening on the other end. I think it would be a real letdown for your team to know that they didn't have the opportunity. But I think they also know that Dartmouth is heavily favored in that game. I think they want to just finish out their season on a high note, give themselves that chance, but also finish out their season beating Princeton and spoiling our chance at an Ivy and maybe elevating their seed in the tournament as well.
So what is the strength of this Cornell team? It looks like, you know, like I said, they take a lot of shots. It looks like they're pretty strong on the circle. Their goalie's pretty good.
Yeah, I think their attack is really pretty good. They work well together. They set a ton of on-ball picks. They've got a lot of kids who can put the ball in the net. They're good dodgers, and when they dodge, they have their heads up. So, you know, if you double on them, they're ready to pass it inside. I've always been impressed with the Cornell attack. I think they move well. They read each other well. And maybe they're not, you know, scoring at as high a clip as we are in terms of their shooting percentage, but they are getting some good looks at Cage.
So, and you and Cornell coach Danny Grapp go way back?
We do. I mean, we've been coaching against each other for a long time now. We work some camps together. We've certainly have played each other a lot in recent years, both in Ivy tournaments and NCAAs, as well as in season. I think the other thing about Cornell is, you know, their defense can be tough. They play both man and zone, and they'll often rotate from one to the other, you know, in the course of each half, in and out. And so it's your kids have to be on their toes and really reading what type of defense they're in and being ready to attack accordingly.
And Kyla Sears went over the 100 goal mark for her career as a sophomore. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, pretty phenomenal.
And she had the behind the back goal.
She did. That was nice. It was a nice exclamation point on that play. She got a nice feed from Georgie out of transition and had the opening. I mean, she's just got a great stick and is such a competitor. I mean, her skill is phenomenal, and to reach the 100 goal mark before the end of sophomore year, I mean, it just really speaks to the impact that she's had on our program.
Who was the first player to have a behind the back goal for you here?
Well, I don't know who had the first behind the back goal, but I will tell you, in 89, our defense wing Sarah Helm had a behind the back pass to Kristen Mountner that led to a big goal on Lori Love Field in a key game for us. So that was probably the first really cool behind the back that I can recall.
You okay with stuff like that?
I think at the right time and place. I mean, if it's a one goal game and you have an open shot righty up, then I think you should take the sure thing. But in that type of a situation, I think it was the perfect shot. She knew she had the goalie where she wanted her. There wasn't a defender behind her. And, I think that makes it fun. I think when you can, showcase your skills, when you do have that shot and your skill set, go ahead.
So it'll be a doubleheader Saturday up in Ithaca. The men are at noon. The women are at 3. If you're going to be in Ithaca, you get to see both games. The men playing again in the Ivy League tournament, they need to win that game by 3 or more. The women playing for an Ivy League championship, which would be the 6th straight for the Princeton women. All they need to do is get a win for that to happen, and they also would be the number 1 seed in the Ivy League tournament. We will be back next week to talk about how this game goes, and we'll look ahead to the Ivy League tournament at that point. And then, of course, the NCAA tournament is the following weekend after that. So a lot of exciting things here for Princeton women's lacrosse. Chris Saylor, thank you for being with us here on The Chris Saylor Show.
Thanks, Jerry.
For Chris Saylor, I am Jerry Price. Thank you for being with us this week and every week. And thank you for your continued support of Princeton women's lacrosse.